This is Joel Spolsky, the host of the Stack Overflow podcast. Our podcast depends on listeners like you, who aren't you because you're already listening, and we need more listeners like you. We don't have any kind of fancy marketing budget, so please, if you enjoy this podcast, tell your friends to subscribe. Thank you. How long has it been since we've done a podcast? This is already... Maybe it's the MRI made me forget everything.
5-year reunion from the last podcast.
It just seemed like it was a long time ago. Oh, shoot. I didn't prepare anything. I was so busy working on...
Alex told me you were writing jokes in the joke writer's room.
I was, but...
Yeah, we have a writer's room downstairs.
Next to the gift wrapping wing.
Yeah.
Y'all need more funding.
This is the Stack Overflow podcast, episode 101, 101 recorded Dalmatians. Sorry. Recorded Thursday, February 16th, 2017, at Stack Overflow headquarters in New York, New York, home to world-class hospitals and MRI facilities where more than 8 million people live in peace and enjoy the benefits of democracy. Today's podcast is brought to you by the WordPress Development Stack Exchange. Remember, it's for developers. Today's podcast, the usual crew, VP, well, because they, you know, people go on there and ask WordPress questions and they are not welcome.
Yeah, I know the developers are welcome.
Against WordPress, so to speak.
Against?
Well, yeah.
It's not like a pro-con kind of thing.
Sorry, you're interrupting my intro. On today's podcast, the usual crew, VP of Stack Overflow, Jay Hanlon.
Good afternoon.
VP of Engineering, David Fullerton from the Engine Room.
Good morning.
Say it like Scotty. Come on. Say it like Scotty.
Faster, Scotty, faster. Can't you go faster than Warp 8? And our news editor is Ilana Itzhaki.
Hello, everyone.
And on today's episode, a special edition of Stump Nick Craver, Stump Alex Miller with Alex Miller. Did I explain that correctly? It's Stump Nick Craver, but today with special guest Alex Miller. So it's Stump Nick Craver with
Alex
Miller.
It's like the Tonight Show featuring Johnny Carson, tonight featuring not Johnny Carson.
Correct, yeah. It's like, wait, you can't even think of one different name of
the
a person.
The guy with the big chin, the chin guy. He was
Jay
often
Leno.
The guy
who
was
Jay
Leno. Johnny Carson.
Jay Leno,
yes. Right. See, it's thank God you're here.
And today's special guest, creator of WordPress, who you just heard, Matt Mullenweg.
Howdy, howdy.
Hello, I'm your host, Joel Spolsky. Okay, normally I have a segment here for a rant, and really all I want to complain about is Slack. Which is like just a whole bunch of inboxes full of stupid baby pictures.
Hey!
Well, all right, this one happens to be your baby.
I like that we have this avenue to play out.
To be what set me off.
Our own personal petty conflicts over like or dislike of baby pictures, but this seems to be taking it to a new and perhaps unhealthy level. Okay.
I heard that you have a dog.
Yeah. But I don't put the dog. The See, only channel I put my dog in is Dogs of Trello, and I'm not even allowed into that channel anymore. I've been banned. From all.
See, Matt's a guy who's like a professional, like find the happy medium. He immediately goes back to, don't you have a dog that you might, perhaps you can relate to someone liking to share pictures of a adorable creature.
To be clear, this was while I was sitting around for half an hour waiting for you guys to call me into the podcast. I decided to post some adorable baby photos.
Is that what we make
Joel,
you do?
And
we
now
make
Joel is upset about it.
We make you just sit there in the engine room waiting for a call from the bridge? Like you can't call us or anything? Or
that's what I was doing. I was
and
just
you don't, you have no idea what's going on, right? Like you're just like, I wonder what they're doing. I wonder why this is taking so long. There's no way for
it's
me.
Worth mentioning. These are like,
accurate.
These are the world's cutest baby. And I have children. These are good pictures.
Yeah, they're better than
She's
your baby
She's so expressive.
Let's we could spend the whole podcast describing a picture of an adorable baby for our listeners so
but
they can really appreciate.
This is what's wrong with Slack. It's like there's no end. I mean, like at what point do you just say this is supposed to be work and we're supposed to be chatting about the matter at hand here?
You mean the serious focus the podcast normally has.
Like the
has.
Podcast, yeah, exactly. Yeah. Like the podcast that we're currently recording, people. I got a message from somebody saying you guys need to talk less on the podcast. And I think he meant like less of the jibber jabber and the AM radio that we do at the beginning.
It does seem like this particular podcast might be more entertaining as a visual medium. Really.
Mm-hmm. That would be too
There's
hard.
Just pictures that no one can see, but we don't
oh,
talk.
I see. Yeah,
might we could help just, this particular podcast.
Basically, put the GIF of the day or something.
The what?
GIF. The GIF of the day.
Really? GIF. GIF is a kind of peanut butter, right?
Remember, it was a Constitution question.
The Constitution is to be respected.
All right, so I got a 1-minute tech review.
What have you tried?
MRI. Never had an MRI before. I had
really?
One this morning. Magneticing resonance imaging.
Did you get the stand-up kind or the lay down in a scary tunnel kind?
Lay down in a scary tunnel kind. Okay. Here is my review. A, the music quality was very poor. They give you headphones and they let you listen to any Pandora station. But the quality was surprisingly poor. Number two, it's almost impossible to hear the music anyway over the loud beeping sounds that machine is making. I don't
kind
know
of
if
shrieks
you're aware of this,
yeah,
but I don't know. Magnets in my youth were silent. I was expecting them to be silent. Third part of my review is sometimes I had to hold my breath for too long, and so not recommended is my.
And they probably made you take out both your tongue rings, I imagine.
Wait a minute, where are they? Okay. That is the 1 Minute Tech Review. We have an episode of Stump Alex Miller today. Normally we do Stump Nick Craver, and it's called Stump Nick Craver. Unfortunately, Nick Craver is busy doing actual work and could not be bothered to come join this very important podcast, which affects very many people.
Really? We're having trouble booking our own employee? Is that really what's going on here?
Pretty much. So on today's Stump Nick Craver, we have a substitute, Alex Miller. He's, instead of answering questions about servers, he should be answering questions about frequent flyer miles and airliners. And in order to make it extra difficult, because just asking questions is just not stumpifying enough, we're going to have him do this while going through security, through a TSA security check, and he's not allowed to use pre-check.
Oh, I like it. We're going like Japanese game show style, where like we're going to dump a bucket of slugs on his head while he tries to do calculus or something.
Correct.
I may have mixed up Japanese game shows with Double Dare a little bit, but so, you know what I'm, you understand that.
So today with Alex Miller, here is Stump Alex Miller. Can we get Alex on the phone?
Hello?
Alex, are you there?
Yeah, can you hear me? Yeah,
we can hear you. Are you ready to play Stump Alex Miller?
I am. I may have to put my phone down when I go through the metal detector.
Okay, but listen. So you're going through the security, TSA, JFK, yep. Terminal 4.
Yep.
On your way to, I don't know where you're going, but just to make it extra difficult, your job is to answer as many of these questions as possible in 60 seconds. Are you ready?
Go.
Okay, you want to fly business class Alaska to Peru. What's the best way to use miles to do it?
That's going to be United Mileage Plus, but flying on Copa Airlines. That's going to run you about 35,000 miles each way.
Very good. At the exact moment as I am being born in the past, an airliner is landing in Dakar, Senegal.
That's going to be Air Freak. I'm going to say Flight 16, and I believe that took off from Abidjan.
Correct. For extra credit, the aircraft type.
DC-8, all economy class, of course, and I believe they served a light lunch.
All right, stop showing off. Correct. If I told you that I saw Alpha 6 or Alpha Papa Delta, what did I see?
That's an Etihad Airbus A380 taking off from JFK
Correct.
Airport.
Correct. On its way to?
Abu Dhabi, their hub.
All right. Now, identify this sound.
That's going to be an L-1011 taxiing, but it's only the left and center engines, I think. And so, Eastern Airlines?
Wait, left and center?
Yeah.
Oh, my God. That's pathetic. Alex, why would the left engine even be on, you moron? What kind of... Cut him off. Cut him off. This is ridiculous. Why do we even do this?
That was embarrassing. It's like amateur hour out here, man. That was... Ugh.
All right. We'll try again next week. Jay, anything new going on in Stack Overflow land?
Let me think.
Oh. I'm getting angry tweets about the redesign and some kind of
tweets.
Joke about how GitHub changed their header to be black and we changed our header to be white. And so we flipped header colors, essentially.
Right. But to be clear, the reason we did it was because GitHub went dark.
Yeah.
They were getting rid of all these white pixels. They like just threw them away.
Right.
And no one was using them.
Right. And we rushed out a new design.
They're probably just trying to save electricity, right? I mean, when you think of it, like illuminating a black pixel on the screen takes fewer volts or whatever they are. I mean, you know, across the millions of people that are looking at Stack Overflow and or GitHub every day.
This has been debunked, right? There was some movement a while ago to try to get Google to change the background to black because it would save so many jillions of trees or something. And then somebody actually debunked it.
I feel like these types of energy conversations always end the same way with someone pointing out that like none of this compares to dealing with the cow fart problem. Like that's the end of every energy conversation I have. Cow farts are the real problem.
Yeah, I know, but we're designing headers here for our nav bars. We're not working on methane.
So the new nav.
It looks good.
I think it's lovely. I think the team's done a great job.
Is there a reason for the redesign?
There were a couple of different things. The team actually wrote a pretty good blog post really kind of laying out all the things that went into it. A big part of it was over time as the site evolved and there were more things we were doing, right? So as jobs became part of stackoverflow.com, as we expanded into documentation, we're doing more things. The nav never really reflected that, even when it was just Q&A. Like a good example is you had like users, questions, tags, ask a question. We're all the same like nav tab at the top. Things had kind of gotten pasted on over time and they all worked and made sense as an individual kind of best path to get something in. Like none of these decisions were crazy. But over time, it wasn't really reflective. And what we learned was a lot of users had no idea that stuff existed. It was kind of lost. And so they did a lot of talking to users. They did user research about the old bar. And then there was a really collaborative process where a bunch of designers all took a run at kind of coming at it from different perspectives. And then they kind of aggregated the best ideas they found in there. And said, let's try and come up with a cohesive design, but that incorporates these ideas. And then, of course, the next thing is then retesting that. And there was just a lot of user feedback. one thing we did discover is an enormously larger number of people use the top bar. So both mm-hmm. saw their notifications, mm-hmm. saw achievements, but also just anonymous people navigated to jobs, navigated to questions. More people signed up, maybe because it's sticky.
Maybe it's just the Hawthorne effect.
Right. Part of it is because it's new.
Do we know about the Hawthorne effect? Have we talked about this in this podcast?
I don't know. Let's talk about it.
The Hawthorne effect is this principle. They were trying to improve productivity in a factory. Yeah, I think a factory.
Some kind of work.
And they were measuring people's productivity, and they started doing experiments. They're like, let's raise the light so it'll be brighter and people will be more productive. And they raised the light and everybody was more productive. And they're like, okay, that was interesting. Then they're like, let's lower the light back to the old level and see if it goes back to being unproductive. And they lower the light back to the old level and people became even more productive. And, you know, they changed the paint colors and then they went back to the
Which
old paint colors.
Which is constant change.
And it was actually the changing, it turns out, that was making people more productive. And in fact, it's not the changing. That's sort of the myth of the Hawthorne effect, which is that you just change anything and people do more of it. It was the fact that the people felt like people cared about their productivity. Like the very fact that there were these researchers with clipboards walking around measuring their productivity made them more productive. And that was the real effect, not so much the changing of the light level. But I think in our case, it's just like if you move stuff around in the user interface, people are like, oh, what's all this stuff? And they click on it once. And after 2 weeks, it goes back to kind of, you know, the normal rate.
Yeah. Some amount of what you find in any test, if it's a visual change, you can assume is that it caught people's eye because it's different.
They're like, where's the thing? And they click on everything trying to find the logout button.
Yeah. People explore.
Cancel
and
my account.
It.
You move cheese everywhere.
I will say the first test, the anonymous test, ran for a very long time. There's lots of reasons, but to get statistically good convergence, we ran it for quite some time, and then it kept going after we had a pretty clear vision. Long enough, I think it's safe to say some of it will stick. Like, some of it may be the change.
Yeah.
And also, it's just more intuitive. Like, if you look at the two, it makes more sense in a lot of ways. As always, when we roll out a change, we tested it. We actually also let Meta give us feedback and opt into it. We got a ton of feedback on Meta. Almost every single suggestion we got there, we incorporated at least partially. There were a lot of things they caught early on that weren't working or working weird.
We took all your advice and we incorporated it all.
There weren't all. There was a few people had very strong opinions about what colors things should be.
Yeah.
And part of what we found in there was like people were like, it shouldn't be white, it should be black. It must be black.
Bike shed.
Yeah, a little bit bike shed. But to be fair, while people were saying it must be black, when you dug into the posts they linked to and the observations they were making, part of what they were really highlighting was people scan pages in zones.
Yeah.
And when it's very
when
white
you
and your page is very white, the cognitive load
is higher.
To locate the area where the nav is higher.
Yeah.
And that we needed, they correctly pointed out it needed some higher degree of contrast to define this area. Anyway, it's an interesting exercise because they come in and they say, this stinks and it's ugly and it should be black. And it's easy to write that off as like, your design preference isn't really welcome here, right? So you never say it that way, but the designers have thought this through and everyone has different preferences. But what's key is you get past the it should be black and you get past the I hate yours and try and dig into what they're getting at. What they're getting at was a legitimate UX suggestion that improved it. And so anyway, the team's done a phenomenal job, I think. They literally laid out like, thanks for all your input. You gave us 92 things. We did 91 and a half of them. And the response has been phenomenal. What I've mostly heard is we're right and GitHub's wrong.
Yeah.
And they're probably going to go out of business because they don't understand why.
Well, careful that you say that because then they'll blame you if that, when that happens. First thing I want to say.
Yeah.
Is navigation, like top-level navigation, it always, like, as your site evolves, you just sort of end up adding stuff on there. And
sure.
It becomes crufty and stuff gets hung off in the wrong places. And you don't have quite enough room because somebody figured out, like, a reasonable number of pixels is this. And now you have to insert the entire Word documentation with a little beta label. You got to get that in there somewhere. What was I going to say? I had a point here. My point, and I had one, is, okay, so we got a new navbar. Great.
Matt, have you seen the new navbar?
No.
Matt, the funniest thing you could do right now is say, overall, it's fine, but why did the designers not choose a serif font? Because they'll just all explode. Their brains will all break simultaneously.
What do you, no, there's no serif anywhere. Are you kidding? Serif is over.
It was a joke.
Serif is from the past.
Back to the bike shed thing.
You know, serif is actually, we should bring back serif now that we have retina screens.
WordPress does.
Do you have it in the UI in Chrome?
We do.
Like, it's weird. I wouldn't know that about our own site.
But it feels right for WordPress. Like, I don't know. It's like the same way the Times is in serif, right?
I'm going to look at my new blog.
That's Twitter.
All the same. Come on, man. Wait, what did I do wrong?
It's nice we have the CEO of Automattic and founder of WordPress here to help as Joel's internet coach. That is not your blog or your website, Joel. That thing is called Twitter. You can tell by the birdie flapping around in the corner.
Hey, you guys have, first of all, it's Helvetica, or it looks like a...
We switched to Systems font, so that should be San Francisco. On your computer.
Oh, it's just copying from the menu.
I like San Francisco.
And this looks like it's black.
We do have dark navigation and sidebar.
And is this howdy because you're in Texas now?
It's howdy, yes. Although there are English localizations that change it to good day. And it's actually true. There's an Australian translation, a British translation.
All right.
There is a serif in the right in the editor. So when you edit.
Okay. Serif is more readable, but in print when you have high resolution. But on old low resolution screens, it was just a bunch of extra pixels that drove people crazy that were hard to fit into the grid of the 72 DPI screens. But now that we have Retina everywhere, we could bring back serif.
True. So I'm curious, though, we've got someone who does this for another massive scale.
Yeah.
We'll get to the traditional Matt interview later. But when you guys look at significant design changes, what's the process?
Ooh, that is tricky. So for WordPress core, actually, I would say in an open source project, design changes are really, really hard.
Yeah.
For much the problem, it sounds like you ran into a meta and things. But there's often really good arguments on all sides.
Yep. Right.
And so ultimately, you need to make a decision and
your community is just going to hate you and somebody's going to send you a, you know.
Not the one thing that people always like is when you add ability to customize things.
That's what happens to open source. They resolve this problem of not having to decide something by giving you a checkbox with a choice. And we did that, and it's bad.
Not bad.
We have a checkbox that's like, go back to the old nav or something.
No,
make the nav not stay on top.
So let's talk about it. So
43 people are going to use that checkbox, but a million people that go into the settings page are going to have the settings page be full of all kinds of historical
cognitive
junk
load
that they don't need.
Don't you worry your pretty little head, because no one has ever successfully found our settings page. It's not going to get in most people's way.
It's true.
Don't fret about that.
That's right. That's
no,
right.
I think this was, so like, we generally start from this notion of like, don't start flipping to like, everyone can pick their own version of the website, because you got to maintain it and it's a mess. And then you're not really doing the work to figure out the right defaults and what really works and all that stuff.
Exactly.
But this was a clear example where we had lots of...
Stop talking. We're done.
If you could stop yelling out the mean nickname I had in junior high school, I'd really appreciate it.
It's no but, it's and.
Yes. Okay. So yes, and what you said is backwards, because the correct thing is the opposite. In this particular case, so we are reluctant to make everything a setting, but this was a great example, I think, of where what we essentially had was very clear data that for most users, the clear default that the sticky bar caused them problems. And when you now analyzed it, the maintenance involved in dealing with just a sticky versus non-sticky nav bar was really small. So to your point, the primary cost was clutter in a settings page.
This is all wrong. You go ahead, you don't have to change it, but the maintenance is absurd, because now you have two versions of everything. And every time they change the CSS, you have to test against both those versions. Why not?
Well, that's the point.
Just make them grease monkey it if they don't want
to. We didn't give a checkbox to go back to the old nav. That would have been maintaining two things.
Just the stickiness.
Yeah, I know, right. But that's a thing. That's a CSS change.
It is one thing to keep track of, but it's one line of CSS.
I don't want
to
kill myself.
So hang on, I'm writing down your opinion with my invisible pen here, and I'll bring it back to the imaginary team to reconsider the compromise we've already landed on.
You know where Word for Windows got
on
at some
writing,
point?
I'm writing an imaginary asterisk.
In the options, they had a checkbox at some point that said fewer checkboxes.
No.
Well, it was like simplified options or whatever. And when you turn this mode on, you only got like 18 options instead of 453.
So anyway, in conclusion, I think the community, they gave us great feedback, helped us improve it. The overall public reception has been really strong. I'm shocked how many people we see saying like, this is awesome and what's wrong with GitHub. I actually thought it would be exactly 50-50 because everyone hates one or the other.
No, everybody loves GitHub and everybody loves Stack Overflow.
I think they're both, fine.
And WordPress.
Yeah, fine. You okay, Joel?
Anything else changed? You said there were three big things that changed.
I'm writing down that idea for the checkbox.
Fewer checkboxes. An option that we can just turn on for Joel.
I think that's a great idea.
And what happens is that checkbox itself doesn't show up in the fewer checkboxes mode.
Exactly. Perfect.
To get to your earlier question, though, I think the key is just to change things so frequently that people become used to constant change. Because when you change it too infrequently, like the header change becomes a big deal.
Yeah.
Like, you've probably spent more time talking about this on the podcast than should have taken for
remember.
The whole feature.
Yeah. Yes, everybody's already forgotten it.
I think the three things I was saying, there are two other blog posts out recently. I think both out of our data team.
Oh, blogs. Yes.
That were kind of interesting
blog. There's
and
a student
awesome.
Blog post all about the students using Stack Overflow.
Yeah. So our regular listeners will recall we now have two data scientists.
Yeah.
Julia Silke, who was on recently, and Dr. Dave of the Ask Dr. Dave Data Desk.
Yes. So Dr. Julia wrote what programming languages are used most on weekends, and Dr. Dave wrote how do students use Stack Overflow. So both people sort of took a slice of the data and kind of dug into it in interesting ways. And we like to say, how do students use Stack Overflow? But what we're really trying to say is, how do students use computers? And what programming languages are people having problems with on weekends. There may be other programming languages that people never have any trouble with, and so they just don't show up in the data at all.
We don't get any WordPress questions because it's so intuitive that no one's ever hit a hurdle they couldn't clear on their own.
Right, way to go. Then why do we have a sponsor undermining the WordPress stack completely?
If we assume the discrepancy, they always look at the ones that are different. We assume the discrepancy is the higher use on weekdays means people use it for side projects.
Yeah.
And weekend is more things they choose to use to learn, to explore, as opposed to they have to.
Mm-hmm.
I do think the most dramatic, I found was like SharePoint, like just destroys everything else. It's like no one would ever do this if they didn't have to, is what I took away from the whole study.
All right. That's certainly not a thing that people do for fun. It's sort of sad. The Microsoft technologies, PowerShell, VBA, SQL Server, Oracle as well, but Excel VBA, these are all like work things. To be fair, I was always very excited when Stack Overflow got usage on weekdays because it was a sign that it was a productive thing that people were using to produce positive economic output. Same with Trello. The usage was much higher on weekdays. And that was a pretty strong sign that Trello was being usable for people to actually
not just
make
wedding planning.
It's not just like Snapchat is probably kind of even throughout the week, I would guess. Might even be more on weekends.
If I could figure out how to open it, I'd answer your question.
Yeah. I can't close it, but that's okay. okay, sorry, I interrupted you. There were two new blog posts.
No. So Julia did a really cool one that gives a little color on what languages seem to be more for fun, for side
for
projects
work.
Versus
yes.
work. And then Dr. Dave talked about the differences between what languages we see people using in school, at
in
university,
school.
Where we could identify universities relative to the rest of the presumably more professional user base.
But also a kind of fun thing, the universities that ask the most Stack Overflow questions are the United States. MIT, in Canada, University of Toronto, United Kingdom, Imperial College London. That sort of makes sense. I would have thought Cambridge, but it's pretty close second. And Australia, University of Melbourne. Melbourne, it's not as good as Sydney. But they ask more questions. And these are pretty much what people would expect. I think
really?
This is what
MIT?
Would have been my guess.
One thing I didn't know is, are these normalized for the number of students?
It's just huge because there's so many people there. And they all have to take some kind of like statistics class where they learn R, or everybody at MIT has to take 6.001 and learn Python.
But I don't think these numbers are normalized for the number of students. So I would have expected it to be like...
They're not. These are the largest technical universities in each country, basically.
Yeah, these are the ones that have the most people.
I guess so. I thought the most interesting graph in that blog post is actually the one that's the public versus private universities in the U.S. I thought that was interesting, like the different technologies that they're teaching in public versus private schools.
Oh, yeah. The public universities tend to do things like Excel VBA and ASP.NET and a lot of kind of useful Microsoft things. And then the private universities are all about the Heroku
TensorFlow,
and Flask and the...
Why is that, though? That
Haskell.
Surprises me.
I've always known that. That's sort of this invisible phenomenon where the private universities, I don't want to say private universities, it's really the like the liberal arts universities and stuff. They try to have a computer science curriculum that's preparing you to know the theory of computer science. And the public universities and a little bit more of the, you know, two-year colleges, et cetera, are trying to prepare you for a job when you get out of school.
They also get sponsored by Microsoft and other proprietary companies.
Really?
Yes. So a lot of these, like at the University of Houston and others, the curriculum is highly influenced by commercial interests.
Did not realize that.
Isn't their graduate program larger on a relative basis?
Nobody is learning ASP.NET MVC in a graduate program. That is not happening. I guarantee you.
Okay.
The truth is the real distinction is sort of like the ivory tower versus the
sort of.
Kind of the crass commercial like trade school. Two opposite extremes, and that's really the dimension, and so private and public.
Only sort of. I think it's interesting. You do see in the private side some of the like more theoretical languages like Haskell and some of the like Scikit and things like that. But the top is like Heroku and Django, which is, it is practical stuff. It's like, you're not going to learn Heroku unless you're trying to actually run a website. So it's not just the theoretical stuff. I don't know. I thought it was kind of interesting.
Yeah. The other thing that was interesting is it's like, hey, there's all these kids learning programming, but if they're learning MATLAB and NumPy and R and stuff like that, it's very likely that they're kind of on a science-y track, just a STEM track in general. Heck, they could even be doing anthropology or something.
It's programming as a means to science and statistics, right?
Yeah, and a lot less computer science for its own sake.
So go read the blog posts. They're both on blog.stackoverflow.com. You can learn more about all kinds
Absolutely.
Of cool data science stuff.
Fascinating. Okay, as you know, we're preparing a constitution for Stack Overflow. Each week, we bring a proposal, and you, our listeners, decide on whether that proposal becomes a part of our new constitution for Stack Overflow. Let's start with the results from last time. Last time, the question was, you're driving with a friend. Everybody remember this question? Are you allowed to tell the friend to get out? You know, they're in the nav position. We like to call navigator, co-pilot. You're driving. Can you tell them to get out and direct you into a parallel parking space? And with results of last week's stupid constitution question, Here's news editor Ilana Yitzhaki.
I disagree with this, but it's 66% pro.
Pro.
The winner is Haikus by Isaac. I reach out for help. You guide me to safe landing. Social bonds are built. It's so beautiful. But still, no, don't do it.
Wow. Okay. Yeah,
if I recall correctly, you took this very personally. Your response to this simple pro or con question was basically, F you, I can park without your help, yep. If I recall correctly.
Yeah. Okay. Yep, that's exactly.
Okay.
All right. For today's Constitution question, if you frequently switch back and forth between Macintosh and Windows, for example, using Bootcamp, or maybe you have a Mac, but you need to log on to Windows Terminal Service sometimes, something like
Parallels.
That.
Parallels.
Yes, or Parallels, sure. Right? The question is, should you remap the Command key to Alt, and then the Alt key to the Windows key, and vice versa? Or should you just live life in eternal confusion?
I want to hear Matt's take before I answer.
Yeah.
So I actually use alternative keyboard layouts like Dvorak. So I'm used to switching to different things. I went between Mac and PC for a while. And so I think you just learn like the different spacings, just like playing two different instruments or something. So I say leave it.
Okay. What instruments do you play?
Saxophone, piano, clarinet.
Saxophone, one of the instruments that has push buttons.
It does have push buttons, yeah.
I wish everyone could have seen Joel asking if saxophone was the instrument with the push buttons as he like played a magical giant flute with his hands, an invisible magical giant flute. It's tragic that this is not a more visual medium.
But like, for example, a kazoo, for example.
A clarinet would extend out in front of you, not to the side.
I think that was the Richard Stallman flute he was playing.
Thank you.
Okay.
What were we even talking about? Yes, if you switch back and forth between Macintosh and Windows, do you remap Command to Alt and vice versa? Pro is yes, you should remap them. Post your answer to Twitter using the hashtag StackOverflowPodcast. I know that uses up a lot of your characters. With either pro or con and your explanation, short but thick, fit it in 140 characters. The best explanation, whether on the winning side or the losing side, because what gets on the show is a convincing explanation or a funny explanation. And even if you're not on the side that wins the survey and gets your thing into the Constitution, you're going to win the prize. It will be read on next week's podcast, and you'll win a fabulous Stack Overflow sticker, courtesy of the Stack Overflow podcast. We should remake all the Stack Overflow stickers to be on a black background instead of a white background like they are now. Also, if you have an idea for a future constitutional amendment, please submit it to me. Simply come to my office, write it on a 3x5 card, or mail it to Stack Overflow, 110 William Street, 28th floor, New York, New York, 1-00-38. Thank you.
Did you miss the memo on not giving the stalkers our actual address? Because I feel like it was super
clear.
It's
on. You just go to Google Maps and you're like, where's Joel's office? Or post it to Twitter using the hashtag Stack Overflow Podcast. This has not happened in the past. We have not yet gotten one vote constitutional amendment. I have had to make up every single one. And really, it can be as terrible as you want, and we will feature it in a future poll.
Can I propose one?
Yes, yes. Thank you.
We'll name it after you, too.
I'm ready to type.
I would like to know whether the served HTML of Stack Overflow should use tabs or spaces.
Served HTML, tabs, or spaces. Well, what if it's like magically minified through some process of, okay, we're going to have some pretty strong opinions.
I feel like we've been ambushed. I feel like we've been ambushed with the tabs or spaces question. It's been forced to the surface. We're going to have to confront it head on.
So in HTML, spaces are non-significant. You could have a tab in between every word.
Taking it to a whole other level, guys.
This is going to be called the Photomat Amendment.
Now, somebody's going to say we should, well, we haven't asked the question yet. Somebody's going to say you should use fewer characters or strip them out because it's, you know, less bytes over the wire. But actually, with any decent compression scheme, that doesn't matter.
Really matter. And they should have said fewer cars, not characters. Yeah.
Cars.
Yeah. I'll just have you know, Joel, that our blog is now at stackoverflow.blog.
Ooh, that's funny because I've been going there for quite a long time, completely unsuccessfully.
You've been trying to type it in?
It's not. It turns out that I was using B-L-A-G-U-E, the French word for joke.
Surely it's related to brogue.
No, blog is who owns French for joke.
Where did the dot blog TLD come from? Somebody made that?
WordPress.
Oh,
that is true.
Right.
Yes.
Yeah.
So this brings us, you've already heard him weigh in and suggest constitutional questions, but I think it is time to formally welcome Matt Mullenweg, who joins us this afternoon. I doubt we have many listeners who don't know. See, they're very excited. Who Matt is.
Yeah.
But for those of you that were just, I don't know, born today or in the last, say, 7 or 8 months, Matt is, of course, the co-founder of the open source blogging. I mean, I describe him what WordPress is. He's the co-founder of WordPress. He is the founder and CEO of Automattic, which I think is the company behind how WordPress makes actual money. We'll talk about, as well as the owner of WooCommerce and Jetpack. And he runs Audrey Capital, an investment and research company, which I don't know much about and I'm excited to learn about. And if I am reading these facts correctly, The only thing I really care about is that you went to high school with Beyonce.
We went to the same high school, the High School for the Performing and Visual Arts.
So you are alumni of the same high school, I should
say. She left early because Destiny's Child started to take off. So we didn't actually overlap while there.
So basically, in high school, you were unsuccessful in that you failed to be in Destiny's Child and leave early.
This is true.
Okay, well, you got a good plan B. It's worked out, I guess, okay?
Well, you had to practice a lot, and I'm sure you had a lot of work to do in that school. When did you have time to do coding?
Code stuff? I don't know. I mean, when you're in high school, you have nothing but time. Like, I feel like...
Even in a performing arts high school?
Yeah.
You're like, you know,
they still get out at 1:30 on Wednesdays.
Like, right? It's like you remember being in high school. Like, you got downtime.
Yeah.
What do you use that for?
First class starts at 7:15. You forgot that part.
That's true.
Which is like when civilized people are like starting to hit snooze buttons.
That's true. I feel like in high school, I was mostly sitting around wishing my life were slightly different. And I feel like Matt was like building toward making a thing that powers 27% of the internet. It's just a different path, is all I'm saying.
Mm-hmm.
So actually, going back, I don't know if it goes back to high school or not, but in our developer story series, one thing I always like to ask is, how did you first get involved in coding and computers? What sucked you into sort of typing things and making stuff happen in a machine?
Jay, that's a terrible question. Matt, what's the largest part of your own body you've ever eaten?
Wow.
You know, like a fingernail or accidentally swallowed
what?
A tooth.
Yeah.
So, how I started in development. Was...
Thank you. Okay. Never mind.
So, my dad actually got an early computer science degree, University of Houston. He was studying math, switched to computer science when I started offering it, and always worked for oil energy companies.
Okay.
Writing code. Kind of like writing code, document management, like stuff you do in giant enterprise corporations. So, both at home and my grandma's house, we always had a computer around. And if it broke, if I messed it up, I would have to fix it before he got home or he'd get mad. So that was kind of...
Fear. Fear is your fear. Answer to how you got involved with computers.
There was this awesome nonprofit in Houston, too, called HalPC, the Houston Area League of PC Users, which Ooh. Started as a BBS service.
Oh, sure.
And then also did sort of like meetups every month for different topic areas and things. And I used to go in every Saturday and volunteer. So people would bring in their broken computers to fix them. And typically it was like an older clientele, but then they'd give us free pizza, so for the child labor. So my dad would drop me off there every Saturday. And then eventually programming, I think, started with regular expressions, actually.
Oh, no.
You can use them for everything.
I'm still... So that's the opposite of me, because I still haven't learned regular expressions.
Oh, I love them. So I think my dad had gotten me the Camel book.
Yeah.
You know, the Pearl book, O'Reilly book. You remember Palm Pilots?
Mm-hmm. Sure, of course.
So I love Palm Pilots.
The 3Com?
I ran the Houston area, the Houston Palm Users Group, HPUG, at HalPC. But I wanted to get books onto it, like Project Gutenberg books.
Uh-huh.
And at the time, they came with like a weird, you know, like 80-character ASCII
they
formatting.
They were very weird.
So it looked really bad on the Palm Pilot screen. So I wanted to like format it.
Those guys
it
were like,
better.
HTML is just a trend, but Project Gutenberg has to last forever. So 80-character Latin 1 ASCII is perfect.
That's true. So my dad got me the O'Reilly Mastering Regular Expressions book, which like opened my mind because it also showed the same examples in multiple languages. So you sort of saw multiple languages at the same time. I was like, this is so powerful. Like, I love regular expressions. Still do, actually.
Yeah.
Awesome. So what's the structure like today? So obviously the core WordPress technology is all open source.
Mm-hmm.
Who's overseeing sort of the pull request? Is it a collective community? I don't know the specifics of how this particular open source project is sort of...
Like, is there a top level
administered
dictator in charge?
Yeah. Is there a group of people? Is it people at Automatic? Does the community thumb wrestle until it is determined?
Yeah. How does it's really like a governance. How is the open source project governed?
Yeah. So... It's sort of a typical open source structure where if you start out contributing, you'll then get sort of increased level of access, maybe commit access for like a given area with review, and then you get sort of unfettered access. And so we have about 15 or 20 people who are trusted to kind of review and commit things and make changes arbitrarily to the code. Now, there's agreement on what goes on releases. And typically, actually how we did it for about 5 years, so from 2012 to 2017, was we had a different release lead for each release.
Mm-hmm.
And the only rule was you couldn't do two consecutive ones. So a different person might, like the last one was led actually by someone in the New York area, Helen Husandi. And she was the grand poobah for that release. So she had ultimate executive authority above myself on what got in that release or didn't.
That's cool.
Drove the process.
And there's no assumption that this is like a permanent position. This is just for this release.
Just
you
for the release.
Kind of the owner of this release.
And there's three major releases per year. So it's kind of like a... Kind of like a 5 month thing because you start before the release starts and then
stewardship. They're like in charge for that period.
Yeah. Yep. And it's like, you know, having like a TV show might have different directors for different episodes, you know, have people bring different things and also different releases could be emphasized.
Or the pilot of an airplane. It's okay. We get it.
But this year, actually as of 2017, we've switched that. So I've taken back over that responsibility. So the lead responsibility.
You seized power, would you say? Is that a fair way to put
There was a bloodless coup.
Okay, perfect. And
he's the invisible dictator for life.
Perfect.
Yes.
So this year I'm leading all of the releases and we switched our structure. So instead of doing time-based releases where we do one kind of roughly like a train model, like every 4 months.
Right.
We have three major areas we're working on. The REST API, a new editor, and a new customization experience. And releases will happen when they're ready. As
so things just get on the train and that's it.
Well, just whenever one of those reaches a milestone of being amazing.
Right.
Which might take a few months, might take 12 months. I don't know.
So you're actually going to pay attention to this now? Or you're just going to let people tell you what to say?
So how we switched it is we chose a lead developer and a lead designer for each one of these three areas. So they're working kind of paired with each other. And they're in charge of this area. And I meet with them regularly. And I'm personally focused most on the editor.
Okay. Because that's what you're most interested in, or?
Yeah, well, we kind of need to do it first.
Okay.
So it's the most important thing right now.
What's wrong with the editor? Editor's pretty good.
So a lot of editors kind of come from this like word model, right?
Yeah.
Where like you have like a document.
Ruler and a toolbar at the top.
Yeah, but we don't have pages on the web.
Okay.
You know? And
yeah, that
in fact,
is a little bit
what
weird.
Makes writing on the web so interesting is bringing in other parts of the web, whether that's Google Maps or contact forms or videos or you know, cool parallax images, like kind of the Snowfall New York Times style.
Right.
Or like maybe how The Verge does cool stories now.
Yep.
So we want to make it very easy to essentially have an editor which exposes a little bit of the structure into HTML. We're calling it a block editor. So you can kind of take these elements, put them in, move them around, and just make your post, whether that's post pages or whatever, like include these really rich elements.
Right.
And right now there's a thing called widgets in WordPress that are just for your sidebar.
Yeah.
But why can you put those things in your sidebar and move them around, but you can't put them in your post?
Yeah.
Doesn't make any sense. So essentially we're creating it so what you can have in the post, you can also have in the sidebar, you can put it anywhere on the page and including in your post.
This allows you to essentially stick HTML into the editor mixed with the simple content?
You could always do whatever HTML you want. It's basically a different interface to make it easier to know different things you can embed and put in there.
Right now,
WordPress has this cool but really weird hidden feature. You know OEmbeds? So if you just put a URL on its own line and press enter, WordPress will magically transform that.
It'll figure out what it's a URL too, like if it's a tweet.
Yep.
And
it'll
do
something smart.
Like one box is it basically kind of thing.
Sort of, but this is like no one knows this exists.
Right.
It's like a cool hidden feature.
When I started writing things on WordPress, I spent like a long time searching for how to do that before I realized that it was just like just put the URL.
which is kind of nice if you know it.
Yeah.
Like the other amazing thing about the WordPress editor that I think all editors should do, if you highlight some text and then paste a URL, it auto links it.
Oh.
Try
wait,
it.
If you highlight wait, say text, that again. Say that again.
And then you hit like Control V or whatever.
And it's a
instead
URL.
Instead of
that
replacing
is what every
the text
editor
with
should
URL,
do.
It makes it hyperlink.
So you paste over the text you want to represent the link, and it's like you hit Control K and then got the
That's
box.
That's it. We're replacing the post editor on Stack Overflow with the WordPress editor.
Why does anything not work that way?
Yeah, let's do that.
Every other place went with that stupid thing. You hit Control K
and
the box pops
but
up.
But remember that Matt is bringing this up as an example of a hidden feature that nobody knows about.
Right?
But once
and nobody's
going to
find, even though it's brilliant.
So everything we're doing, by the way, we're working with TinyMC, which is the sort of people behind that have powered our editor for many years.
Yeah.
And it's all going to be open source. So we want to make it modular enough that if y'all want to use this editor for Stack,
we'll drop it in. We'll take
Awesome. Awesome. So tell me about, this number shocked me. I mean, I think of it as omnipresent. WordPress powers 27% of the internet.
Yeah.
What does the most of that look like? It's not mostly WordPress blogs, right? Traditional blogs, I should say.
There's a lot of blogs, but...
There's a really big spam farm in China.
No, but you see, like, it's like e-commerce sites all in WordPress now. Okay. I mean,
so people these days, the vast majority use WordPress as a CMS. And there might be a blog attached to it, but it's not, like, primarily a journal or
blogs
personal
are
blog.
Blogs so over.
They're still very popular, but most of those happen on WordPress.com today.
Yeah.
Because you don't necessarily need all this extra stuff. Yep. So, and like you said, e-commerce is a very big one. We actually bought an e-commerce company in 2015, WooCommerce, which is an extension for WordPress transformed into e-commerce. But really everything. People make, you know, record collection tracking sites and like pretty much anything you can imagine.
Yeah.
You can do it with WordPress and some plugins. Now, should you is a different question. But.
No, you should use CityDesk. All you got to do is get a Windows 95 computer.
By the way, I am so thrilled and honored that your site has now moved over from CityDesk.
Well, we're honored too. And I'm thrilled and honored that I can edit my website without the ridiculous. Everybody on this podcast knows this. I had to VPN into the Fog Creek network. And then ran Windows Remote Desktop or whatever it's called to get onto a machine that had a virtual machine running under VMware that was a version of Windows 7 that had somehow Visual Basic 6.0 still running. Now, you can't, if you go and try to just install Visual Basic 6.0, you have to find the Visual 6.0 disk. Now, if you don't have one from before 1999 when they stopped making them, you can't get one from Microsoft and you can't download it because at some point they started throwing Java. Microsoft was like, yes, we're going to embrace and extend Java. They started throwing Java on every disk that they were making. And Sun sued them and said, you can't do that. And won. And the consent decree said, Microsoft cannot distribute any disks that have Java on it. And so they went through the list and they're like, all right, and we're no longer going to distribute any of these things. And one of them was Visual Basic 6.0. So you can't get. Okay, so that's why I have this virtual machine, and like it can't just be installed.
I don't even get y'all started on how hard it is to VPN scratch into an IBM clone 286 processor computer. Right. It's a big mess.
And it runs really slowly. And then I would run CityDesk, and it took like, you know, 4.5 hours to like individually FTP all the files. I don't even know where they were going.
And now it's on WordPress, and we're really excited.
Yeah, and, it was actually... and at some point, Jude just was like, can I just throw away this computer? And I was like... Do you need to get anything off of this?
Put it in a museum. Like,
nah, go ahead. Just pave it.
Wow. I think that should be in a museum, actually.
Too late.
Nah, it's not that.
No. So if this helps you guys get off the ground, you know, as social proof that Jolon Software is on WordPress to show other people this WordPress thing might work for them, feel free to use that. I feel like you've done so much for us.
I think I might be a bit of a trailing.
No, I loved your blog post. You're like, after 15 years of bugging me.
Yeah.
But that's true. I'm still working on Daring Fireball, still working on Kotke. There's sites that, before I die, I want to see on WordPress.
Yeah. Okay, that'd be funny. He's posting a lot of videos these days. I've discovered I can't read his blog unless I'm looking for televised entertainment. Mm-hmm. It's more of like, if you want to sit down and watch television for 2 hours, you go to Kotke.org.
Does Gruber, does he have a defense for why he doesn't want him? Does he have a good answer for you?
Yeah. I mean, it's same as Joel's. Inertia. Like, it's a system. Yeah,
it works.
I think he's comfortable with it. Works. He can hack it.
His is probably not as bad as CityDesk, to be honest.
Movable type, yeah.
Oh, okay, that's fine. No, the trouble with CityDesk is it had this theory that you would publish static HTML files, which it would then FTP to a server. And that was, you know, awesome for if you were making a 13-page website and you didn't control the server because people didn't used to control servers. All they had was, you know, a public Unix shared folder that they could put their blog on.
Actually, today this still comes up. So MovableType, if you remember the battle, essentially MovableType would also make static HTML files.
Yeah, Blogger started that way too. I think they still do that unless you use Blogger Pro.
Not for
but
a while,
it used to be like a server under Ev's desk, and so it was even worse than CityDesk in that it had the same bad CityDesk architecture, and it went to the cloud just to even do that terrible thing of making a bunch of static HTML files, which it FTP'd.
But there was the bet, because serving static files is obviously infinitely faster to serve. And I had just read some, like,
not really,
maybe a Joy Ito thing or something, or it was about Moore's Law, and I was like, well, processors double every 18 months. It will get cheaper and cheaper to serve things dynamically. And the dynamicness of it will be a feature.
It's not clear that reading a file off of a file system is slower than reading a record out of a database, especially because everything is cached and everything like that. So it's not even necessarily the case that serving static HTML files will always be the fastest way to serve.
Well, they're within, like, you're talking about serving like billion page requests a day, like 80 million. They're both beyond what anyone needs.
Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, PHP does have an overhead to initialize.
Yeah. There was a time back
then. And you have to connect to the SQL server and everything. It does have like the milliseconds add up versus just doing a quick read directly from like Nginx to a static file. Extremely fast.
Yeah.
But there's a popular plugin for WordPress called Supercache, which serves your essentially WordPress from static files, but it's dynamic.
Yep.
Forget the word for it when you like make the file on the fly instead of pre-generating it.
No, there was a different kind of caching, which is that you would go ahead and just have a whole bunch of 404 errors, but your 404 handler would then go generate the page and throw it in the directory and thus create a cache on the fly. And your theory was everybody gets to see one 404 error for every single page, but it's probably the developer or the guy that just wrote that page.
So Supercache essentially does that.
Yeah.
Except that no one sees a 404.
Yeah.
We fixed that problem.
That's a marquee feature in a product that most people don't see a 404 most of the time.
I think that Vignette went and got one of those stupid patents on that thing and then went around suing everybody who was doing it.
Awesome.
And now they're out of business. Okay.
I think Vignette's still around.
They're probably still around.
They're going to sue you for saying that. You libel lying. Slander, I don't know which is.
You'd be amazed. CityDesk is not the oldest CMS we've replaced this year.
Really? I'm trying to think of. I'm sure there were, it's not just Vignette, but I'm trying to think about like what was popular at that time.
Vignette actually spun out of where I had my first sort of real job, which was CNET.
CNET.
Yeah. I love you. Remember all this stuff. That's amazing.
It was. Man, I love CNET. What was happening is that the whole internet was crashing and CNET was sort of falling apart. But Vignette, which was this content management system that they had, was for a brief moment of time, like had a market cap of like $2 billion or something. And everybody was trying to figure out if their CMS was worth more than their whole company.
Oh, interesting.
So like Salon.com, which is still in business, which is strange, had plummeted from being worth, you know, $18 billion, trillion or whatever to being about $10 million, which is reasonable for what it is, which is a crank newsletter. And but they had a content management system. And for about 20 minutes, they were like, yeah, maybe if we just, you know, make some press releases that we're going to make a product out of our, you know, we can get our market cap up again. And it worked for a week.
By the way, this still happens. Yeah. So Vox has Course.
Yeah.
A lot of the new media startups.
Is they want to build their own CMS.
Yeah.
And then they're like, hey, our CMS is worth something. And now that's why we have 47 different CMS stack exchanges.
You know what's awesome for a bunch of companies where their only valuable asset might be a CMS?
Yeah.
Some guy who comes along and makes a pretty damn good CMS that is free to the world and available to everyone.
And constantly
evolving on its own for free.
Yeah. And puts an end to that nonsense.
But so one other thing we share, you guys are one of the you're bigger than we are, but largest companies that is pretty much fully distributed, right? Your people are everywhere.
Yeah. In fact, we're looking at shutting down our San Francisco office. We got an office there like 6 or 7 years ago. Yeah. Pretty good lease.
Yeah.
But
nobody goes in.
No one goes in. It's like five people go in. It's 15,000 square feet. So they get like 3,000 square feet each.
That's pretty nice.
So they're like playing football.
Actually, it's one giant room. So
it's
okay. It fails.
3,000 square feet. You can't even hear the person at the next desk.
What's funny is everyone just sits in the corner next to each other.
It sounds like a weird like post-apocalyptic movie that you're making, basically.
There's as many gaming tables as people. There's a shuffleboard, two ping pongs, two...
I visited you once in that furniture company, in the furniture showroom on the pier, which got condemned.
Oh, that was a cool spot.
Or something. Yeah.
Pier 38.
Pier 38.
Yeah.
Furniture showroom?
Yeah, it was like a store that sold like modern furniture, like a DWR type thing, only not DWR. Yeah. Modern, by which I mean 1950s style Danish.
Sure.
And they closed or went out of business or something, and you guys took over the lease.
And got all the furniture.
Right.
And this random kayak that hung there was pretty cool.
It was super cool. It had a bar.
It was a cool office. You know, Instagram was upstairs. It was called Bourbon at the time. A lot of cool companies were in that space.
Yeah. Oh. And what's the name of the investor that was...
True Ventures. And Polaris was upstairs. But True was the main one.
True was the one that was investing in a lot of those companies. And then it got condemned because there was a fear that it was all going to fall into the bay. And I don't know if they ever fixed it up or if it's still just condemned now.
So before we get to the news, so speaking of investors, you're basically Kevin O'Leary now. You got an investment firm, yes? Audrey Capital? Did I make this up?
Who's Kevin O'Leary, though?
Kevin O'Leary.
The cow in Chicago.
Kevin O'Leary is one of the, he's the mean guy in Shark Tank.
Gets it.
Oh. No, I'm not the main guy. But a while ago, I started this company, Audrey Capital. They kind of both employ some people who are working on WordPress stuff outside of Automattic and do investments. And it's done very well. I've done about 85 investments out of it. Some have done very well. Actually, some based here in New York, like MakerBot. Yeah. So in taking back over WordPress core developments, something had to go. Last year, I kind of wound
like
down the investments.
And
this year, it officially says, like, no longer making investments. But I think I only did one. Announced one last year. So
that's the new cool thing, is not just being an angel investor. That's like last year's cool thing. The new cool thing is being an angel investor with a website that says no longer making investment.
Yeah, too cool to even do this anymore.
Yeah.
I like that. I like that.
It's true. I also dyed my hair silver in like 2015, like way ahead of the trend.
Before it was cool.
Rap Genius is on, Audrey.
They're just genius now, to be clear.
We had Tom in here.
That's right.
Just genius.
Yeah. We've had a lot of the, we had Anil Dash here. There was some other connection. We've had a lot of the early bloggers on here.
That's true.
And Neil's awesome.
Yeah.
By the way, congratulations on hiring him.
Yeah. Thank you. He's off in New Zealand now, getting yelled at for having decided to eliminate the Kiwi mascot.
Apologize to the company.
Oh, he had to go like up here and like, yeah.
They summoned him to speak at Webstock in Wellington, New Zealand. And now they're lecturing him about
it's
the Kiwi.
Still on the website.
It's still there. It's
I like
not
the hummingbird.
It was only planned to get rid of the Kiwi, but I think that may get.
He should get citizenship while he's there.
Yeah. That's the cool thing all the cool kids are doing.
You're a New Zealander,
aren't
you?
Stop it, but I was born a New Zealander. I'm not like the cool kid that went and tried to buy the citizenship from...
I thought you were born in that place where Breaking Bad happened.
Yeah, there too. Yeah.
All Do you have a secret compound that you will retreat to in the zit of a zombie apocalypse?
No. How are these people going to get to New Zealand exactly? This is my question.
You have to take the pilot's family too, and it's a whole like...
You've got to have your own airplane. But like, where are you going to get enough fuel to go to New Zealand? And why is the airport going to be like working for you?
Global Express, you can do it.
No, no. There's going to be zombies on the runway.
So what's your plan?
I don't have a plan to get to New Zealand. That is not my plan. I'm also not a survivalist, so I don't belong to the collection of people that think that the solution is going to be to retreat to our ranch in New Zealand.
But this is the new hip thing, right, for all these Silicon Valley founders who are like obsessed with this weird like fly off to like their mountain full of gold bars somewhere that they will exchange with I don't know who for what.
On behalf of Silicon Valley founders, we do not all think that.
That's right.
That's exactly what I would say if your plan did not include my protection in such an event. So, okay.
I don't have a tank buried in an underground garage in Manhattan.
A tank? You're still thinking of conventional warfare. It's a zombie war, Joel. I'm tired of explaining this to you.
Well, we should do some news.
We got the news.
Let's do the news.
Apple announced its first original content for Apple TV titled Planet of the Apps.
The
unscripted reality show's format is a mixture of Shark Tank and The Voice. It features developers pitching their new mobile apps to celebrity judges who vie to become the team's advisor. The judges include Jessica Alba, Will.i.am, Gary Vaynerchuk, and Gwyneth Paltrow. Winners of the show will be promoted on Apple's App Store.
Okay, well, that's not a bad idea. And this is actually the first time hearing of this. Have you guys heard of this before?
They have a trailer out already if you want to take a look.
This is just Shark Tank, but only for apps, right?
Right.
Basically. It's the same. It's a group of famous pseudo VCs.
Isn't there one theory that says that you can't make an app anymore? It's too late. The era of just like making an app and getting rich and famous is over.
Way more challenging.
Is it?
That model's super weird. Like the App Store's model. Like you sort of got to have this thing where you can skyrocket to the top, usually on something free.
You can't just list in the App Store and hope people find it. You have to do real promotion and outside stuff. And now you can buy placement from Apple conveniently.
Some of the things, when I think about like how the heck did Instagram ever, there were like 100 things that did exactly what Instagram did at the time that Instagram came out. And then that one became huge.
Like it seems like at the time that I'm sure there were smart decisions that we don't see behind the scenes, but like Instagram and Hipstamatic seemed equally likely to be the same size.
Oh, there were a million of those. The best camera. There were like 1,000.
Camera
like,
plus.
Yeah.
Oh, and then Andreessen passed on investing in Instagram because they had a different investment they had already done.
Oh, that was kind of the same space.
Yeah. But yeah, Instagram, I think it's almost like the purest social, has all the social primitives, like everything that you need in a great social app, Instagram does. So it's great to study. Especially if you look at earlier versions for like what you need to make something more compelling and more social.
I still like Instagram because you control what's in your feed. Even, I mean, you get ads, but there's no algorithm deciding.
They added an algorithm.
Yeah, they did.
Anyway. Wait, I'm not seeing everybody's Instagram.
No, not anymore.
Just like a setup to destroy Instagram.
The only good thing about Instagram is this one thing. And everyone's like, that was just removed.
So what you have to do is you have to right click on the person and say, send post notifications to get every post. But then you get a push notification for everyone.
What you do, Joel, is you go to the settings page and there's a checkbox that says show more settings.
And there's no checkbox, actually.
There's no settings page.
I left it when it was chronological order. You know, then I know exactly where to stop.
Yeah. It's a good example of things everyone says, but all the data shows.
Yeah. Well, that's a lot of the Facebook reaction, right? It's like everyone hates it, everyone hates it, everyone hates it. Everyone's using it more.
Well,
it's,
you got to balance that against what's the other thing people say about like their Facebook timeline or you used to say? It's like you get that one annoying person who's just posting all the time and you're just like, ah, stop, too much, right? Like that's one of the things the algorithm is supposed to solve.
But you can just unfollow them. All right. Well, I'm really sad because that was like the one thing, like I'm literally afraid of the Facebook feed because I know that it's some strange algorithm that's manipulating me to vote for Donald Trump. I don't want that. Definitely don't want that. So I can't run Facebook.
You know what you can do on Facebook is you can choose people to show first in your feed.
Yeah.
And you'll see all their posts.
That,
and you can do list as well.
The trouble is the people I want to follow on Facebook are not publishing anything to Facebook.
Mm-hmm. Also, Joel, if you find the writing on the post is in Cyrillic, you may be encountering the problem you're facing. Like, that's a good tip off.
The Cyrillic language. Okay.
So basically, they're like, Netflix is getting rich doing a thing we have no experience with. Let's do that.
Oh,
like,
they're
let's
doing
just make
TV
original
show?
Content.
Yeah.
Or is it just an app ad? Basically an app ad.
They're trying to do two things, right? It's not quite just like Netflix doing original content.
Oh, that's why it's going to fail. They're like, let's kill two birds with one stone. It'll be like the best of Netflix, and it'll re-promote the App Store and the whole app ecosystem. And so it's going to fail because it's just a big strategy tax that everybody's going to have to pay. But we like all those people. The Jessica Alba, we definitely like. Gwyneth Paltrow, how could you not like Gwyneth Paltrow? Gary Vaynerchuk, Will I Am. I mean, this is just all-star. I will watch it.
And then we'll get a rant at some
That's
point.
Right. You do a one-minute tech review, Apple's Planet of the Apps.
That's right.
Gwyneth Paltrow is going to entirely endorse apps where, like, you can find a more, like, effective social way to pick out, like, a solid gold settee for your living room, I feel like. Doesn't she have that newsletter, that crazy... Is that
Goop,
her?
I don't know.
Goop, yeah, that's it. Mm. Okay, what else we have?
Programmers, scientists, and students across the country are racing to collect data from NASA's Earth Sciences programs and the Department of Energy due to fears that the Trump administration may soon purge the information from government servers. Developers with groups like Data Refuge and the Environmental Data and Governance Initiative are taking these efforts a step further by building systems to monitor ongoing changes to government websites. They hope to keep track of what's being removed and when.
Ah, that reminds me of a time when a programmer who will remain unnamed, it was Matt Pilgrim, noticed that...
Mark Pilgrim,
thank you.
Yeah.
Noticed that Dave Weiner would publish something on his blog. He's the blog, the inventor of
blogging. We know Dave, longtime friend of the company.
Has he been on our podcast? I think he might have.
He should definitely have Dave. He's amazing.
Yeah, he lives in New York.
I think he's been on the podcast. He's definitely been in the office chatting with us. About, I mean, I've met him here.
I love him. Anyway, Mark noticed that Dave was occasionally changing things on his blog. And so he wrote a scraper that hit the blog every 10 minutes, kept track of what he was changing. Whenever he changed something, published like a diff to a feed of like, Dave is a big fat idiot or whatever the name of the feed was. Look how, what a hypocrite he is. And then he would get very excited and his blood pressure would go up every time Dave some way.
I wish this guy were interested in me. Something. He sounds awesome.
Yeah. Yeah.
And Mark was an amazing tech writer, like back in the day. And, but all his work is gone now. Took it all down.
He took it all down. And I think it was very shortly after this particular moment where I think he asked why he had just spent the last 3 days of his life writing code just to show that the poor old man who invented vlogging in New York was sometimes editing his own words. Why was he on such a Moby Dick vendetta against this guy?
It was during the great RSS wars.
It was. Oh. It was. People were very angry. It was very emotional.
Mark's actually the reason that WordPress broke out in a lot of ways.
Why?
He did an amazing essay, When Movable Type Changed Our License.
Yeah.
So
did he have
upgrade...
the diffs?
No. Sorry. To upgrade you would have to pay version 3 didn't add any new features, and to upgrade from version 2 to version 3, you'd have to pay a bunch. And for him, he'd have to pay $535. So lots of people doing angry posts about the cost. Man. It was like, it doesn't matter about the cost. It matters that they change the license. He wrote a post called Freedom Zero. Freedom Zero is, of course, the first freedom of the GPL.
Of the GPL, yeah.
And then he donated the $535 to, well, me at the time. That was all it was. It was by far the largest donation we ever got.
That's awesome.
That's nice.
Did you buy booze with it? What'd you do with it?
I probably paid for the server. You know, like, that was all cost at the time.
So if I understand this correctly, the fear here, I'll try and keep politics out of it.
Are you trying to get back to the news item?
I thought I might.
Is that what we doing?
They're literally afraid that the current administration is going to go erase data that suggests that there's climate change.
They're definitely ripping things down from whitehouse.gov.
So, right. So they're taking things off the website.
Yeah.
And I do think a lot of this stuff feels like Sandlin's razor, actually. Like, it's more likely like random incompetence than like a clear plan. Like, who knows? Who knows?
But I mean, they're removing very specific things.
Right. But they're not, well.
Yeah, they are. They're going on there.
I don't want to ascribe. I don't know what the hell motivates these people, but they're literally afraid they're going to erase the data is what they're talking about.
It does seem a little bit weird. Like, you would think if NASA has created some data or something that it's probably published in some library or
something. I guess that's what, this is someone trying to free it from government constraints, I guess.
I guess. Yeah.
That's why we release our data monthly.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, it's probably good practice no matter what for people to be mirroring this content.
Yeah, because one day you're going to wake up in some weird rage and be like, erase it all! And they, you know.
And we just put it in BitLocker or whatever that thing is called.
It'll still be out there.
Nutella. It's on Nutella.
Wait, really?
No, what is it? What is it?
BitTorrent?
BitTorrent.
Oh, wow.
it's on the Internet Archive is where
MRI.
It goes down.
It's awesome. Magnets, y'all release your data. Joel. It's those magnets.
Yeah. Yeah. And the Internet Archive will hopefully stay around. But I mean, that's just like one site in some building in San Francisco.
Oh, the Watchtower.
No. They replicate worldwide.
Oh, they do?
Yeah.
Oh, that's right.
We should all donate to Internet Archive, actually. They're amazing.
I'm going to do that right now.
We do.
Do we? Yeah, we do.
We do every year. I think every year. Most years.
Okay.
They're kind of the digital library of Alexandria.
You have some philanthropist background. Isn't that one of your passion projects as well?
Yeah, some of the ones I support.
Yeah.
I really, really love them.
We do, too.
EFF, really important. Like, a lot of these are ACLU, like...
Yeah,
a few years ago, you're like, oh, it's nice to have. Now you're like, whoa, we really need it.
I know. We got to start saving ourselves.
I had a colleague the other day coming in from a different country, and he was stopped. The thing happened to him where they made him unlock his phone.
Oh, I've been wondering about that. You know, okay,
wait, hang on. Is he a U.S. citizen?
No.
Not so, a U.S. citizen. He's a permanent resident? Like, what's his status?
No, he was just visiting for
visiting
a meetup
on a visa.
Because we're
travel,
distributed.
Travel visa.
Yeah.
And they made him unlock his phone, and they ran the little program that
they made him unlock his 1Password, too.
What? This is
really
highly suspicious.
From what I can tell, they didn't do the thing where they took and copied the phone.
Why would
they
want to look in your 1Password?
But still, like, unlocking your 1Password, like, I don't know if I would.
Yeah, that is.
To look at what social media accounts he had, apparently.
Yeah, that's
actually
one of those
surprisingly
scary.
Savvy to ask for the 1Password.
But what are they? Okay, now you have a Facebook. What does that tell them? Or are they, do like all terrorists use that VK Russian Facebook clone? Or what do they think? It's weird. I don't know.
It's very intrusive. Like, that feels.
Oh, yeah, it's ridiculous. It's just a gigantic loophole in there. Right to privacy. That should be a news item. Darn
it. It should matter whether he is a U.S. citizen or not. Like, that's just invasive.
I'm not suggesting it's okay because he's not. It's just more of a question of, like, where's the level where this is occurring today? Like, how deep is it?
Yeah. Well, there was the NASA guy.
Like, is it too paranoid to actually have to worry about this every time you fly somewhere? Like, I just flew back, and I wouldn't do this on a trip to Europe, but I just flew back from Dubai. So I said, screw it. I'm just going to, like, wipe my laptop before I come into the country. Which is fine because then I can recreate everything from Dropbox once I get into the country and they can have it. I literally, you hear it's a 4-year-old Mac book. It's like the last working one that has an escape key, but that's okay. They can still have it because it doesn't have any data on it. Certainly, there's nothing they're going to get off of it. But I'm just wondering, like, am I getting too paranoid? And is this going to be like the extra hour of recreating laptops, you know, from Dropbox when I land worth it? And of course, when I landed at the airport, I just have global entry and the middle of the night, there's 9 million people. They've never. The one time they stopped me, it's because they thought I was being obnoxious to one of the little agents. And so they just decided.
Were you being obnoxious, Joel?
When you call them little, they don't like that.
All right. You know how the first stage, they give you a slip of paper, and then there's a guy that just collects the slips? So, like, I walked past him and just handed him my slip and kept walking.
Wow. You gotta
and he
wait
was like,
to be called.
Wait, no, you will wait until I give you permission to pass. And in order to teach you a lesson, he, you know, utilized his constitutional right to just, like, make me sit in a room for 3 hours.
Wow.
Before I continued my way into the country.
3 hours.
It might have been 2 hours.
Wow, that's still.
But wait, so you had no verbal interaction? Like, you just walked past him and so they locked you up, basically?
No, I looked at him, I handed him the thing, and I continued walking without waiting for him to, what they normally do, which is they nod 2.5 millimeters.
Yeah,
indicating
sure.
I grant the permission to enter the United States of America.
By the way, this particular tone of voice may be one you want to avoid in future interactions if you don't want to see the room again, but go on.
Yeah, I mean, they just thought I was being a little bit of a dick, and so they punished me by being a dick back in the way that it was allowed, but they weren't searching my...
It's a little petty.
They need my phone. Oh, it's super petty. It's like a power trippy as hell. Well, you've gone and wasted another hour of your life listening to Stack Overflow podcast number 101. Unfortunately, we did not have time to get to Beyonce today. She's out waiting in the back room, but we won't bring her in. Tell her we'll get her on next week. This episode was recorded Tuesday, February 16, 2017 at Stack Overflow headquarters. If you enjoyed this podcast, please tell a friend, spread the word. We need more subscribers or we're never going to be number one on iTunes. This podcast was brought to you by the WordPress Development Stack Exchange at www.wordpress.stackexchange.com. It's not movable type. It's WordPress. Our audio engineer is Carlos Hernandez. Audio editor is David Greenlee. Technology concierge, Michael Rosa. Producer, where is she? Is Jess Pardue. Executive producer is Caitlin Pike. For Matt Mullenweg, Jay Hanlon, David Fullerton, Ilana Itzkaki, I'm Joel Spolsky. Goodbye.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
Say now that Matt's been on the podcast and Matt and Beyonce are alumni of the same school, it would be accurate to say I hang out in the same circles as Beyonce. Like, that's a fact.
Remember when Twitter went to white? I tweeted about it.
No. I mean, yes, of course, but I put it on the wall in a frame like all your tweets.
It was sort of headache inducing because it's like I don't get where the header ends and, you know, like it's it'd be a different color.
Why does Amazon keep putting a new treasure chest in my top bar? I don't know what's happening. There's a treasure chest, and I'm a big Amazon user, but I don't know why there's pirate. It's very confusing.
The gold box?
Yeah, that is. Yeah, it's a gold box. That's
the 1995.
I think it's still there.
All right, well, I haven't clicked it since 1995.